Welcome to Astronomica, the only Stars Without Number podcast set on a single planet. I am Star Daddy, and I've got some people here that you know them and love them.
I don't.
They bear no introduction, so.
So we're just not going to do that this week?
Let's skip it, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Hey, how's it going?
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, guys.
Howdy.
I was kidding about skipping it. Go ahead.
My name is Jeff, and I play the MS Admiral Grace, the spaceship inhabited by the fragment of a rogue AI in which everybody bumbles around the galaxy, and Hopper, the semi-autonomous medbot inhabited almost entirely by Grace's overriding, dominating programming.
I am Kristen. I play Dr. Hildegard Hypatia Cade, ship's communications officer and ship's morale officer.
Chili cheese.
Oh, that's
still,
chili cheese.
Still the cat.
I lost that one. Well, I did want to say, despite recent events, I do want to confirm that Hildy is not actually a sociopath. She does have empathy and is very worked up about the recent events.
You're a doctor of linguistics and not psychology, so are you really qualified to say that about yourself?
I mean, all human behavior lies within the linguist's scope. Yeah.
I would say not knowing what a sociopath is calls into question your linguistics qualifications as well.
Oh, well, you know, word definitions are within the wheelhouse.
It's an evolving language.
Yeah, but Jeff. No, I just wanted to be very clear. Hildy's not a sociopath. I, however, might be.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You're not.
No, no.
But I want to go back real quick because I'm kind of hung up on how in our setting, the glass ceiling is between women and cats.
Yeah.
It's hard for a woman to ascend to a job that a cat can do.
Hi, I'm Cullen, and I play Anton.
And who is Anton?
Anton is he's a guy that lives on the MS Admiral Grace. He is becoming a much better space pilot. That's kind of his whole his whole shift in careers. He went from being the shoot 'em on the ground guy to the shoot 'em in space guy, which is an exciting new avenue for a man who makes his living by doing violence. You know,
Seeing that put to the test.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, knock on wood. Maybe I'll just steal Kristen's dice before we make any like big career changes.
The luck in here is in Kristen and not in the dice.
Yeah.
That's probably true.
I know because I've stolen Kristen's dice before.
That's true.
She spent all of her luck points, on dice rolls.
We won't need dice.
I'm Colin, and as a great philosopher once said, if Mackie does not exist, then it will be necessary for humans to create him. And I took that job upon myself. I will do till the real Mackie gets here, which should be in 900 years.
4390 or so.
4390, yeah. So, I mean, you know, I'll do till he gets here. Yeah.
That was actually the subtext of that Beckett play.
That's what I thought, you know.
Oh, my God.
Reading between the lines.
Yeah.
All right. And before we get into theater analysis, I had a couple of announcements. First one is we want to thank Josh.
Yeah, Josh.
For sending us some drinks.
Drinks master.
We have a round of the Julep Mule presently poured for the table. And here we are. First sip on Mike. Except for Jeff, who cheated and took a sip earlier.
No, I did too, but I
wasn't going to say anything about it.
There was a leak in the side of the glass, and I had to blot it with my tongue.
Absolutely.
Very good.
Delightful and refreshing. Thank you, Josh.
We're excited about the creamsicle. Is that the other one that we've got coming up next?
Mm-hmm. I believe
nice.
So.
Yeah, so that is. We'll let you know when we get to that one, which will be either at the end of this intro, or you'll hear it in like 2 weeks when the episode that we're doing the intro for next comes on.
Yeah.
Illusion shattered.
Ooh.
Kristen, you can edit this out if you want, but Josh, I want you to know that we have such faith and we are such a fan of your product that when the box got here, it was completely compromised. At like, I was able to remove all of the drinks from the box without altering it in any way from how it was delivered. And so I put them all in the refrigerator and I told everyone, I'm like, okay, guys, you should know that the drinks that Josh sent did get here, but the box was, and I saved the box and showed them that, like, you know, basically I could stick, you know, my whole foot through the hole And they were all like, yeah, it's fine. Yeah, we're going to drink that. And I'm like, okay, cool. I was too, but
it looked like, it looked like the guy that put razors in apples on Halloween got a hold of it.
Yeah, yeah, that guy. Well,
it's a little bit of, you know, hey, if someone put, you know, some sort of weird drugs in it, free drugs.
Bonus, yeah.
Yeah.
There, absolutely. There is just a hint of razor apple.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
That was, yeah, that's an interesting note, Jeff.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, Colin's mail carrier's pee.
Yeah.
Just a little.
Just a little
well,
touch.
No.
All right.
All right. But I will say, this mint julep mule is an excellent drink for the summer Memphis heat, which is
summer my slammer.
Transition to my next announcement.
It's fucking hot.
It's fucking hot. So, as some of you may be aware, we record in a wonderful little town called Memphis, Tennessee, which
is... some of you may be aware, Astronomica Podcast is brought to you and proudly sponsored by Sweaty Man Boobs.
It's true. Yeah.
And not only in Memphis, but in a kiln in Memphis.
Yes, yeah. In a kiln in Memphis, which is in the beautiful Delta region of the United States of America. And regardless of your thoughts on any of that, it's hot, and we are doing our best to not die of heat stroke here in the RV, which means some of our audio may have some fan noises in the background for a couple months here. We really love y'all. We love that you listen. We really like producing audio you can listen to, especially after those first couple months, but we're not going to die from the heat for you guys.
Yeah. So. Also, we've already tested our ability to clean up the audio in post, even with fans running. And this will not be a return to the dark ages of episode
8
through 16. Everything is still good and legible. And yeah.
I would like to take credit for saying to Kristen that she should fix this in post.
Mm.
So anything that sounds good is my...
That's your contribution, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And I'd like to clarify that I would die for you guys, but everybody else at the table is just weak.
You know,
I
feel like your words have about as much clout as a congressional Democrat.
Call my bluff and turn off that fan.
No.
I choose.
All right, then. I'm strong and you're weak.
Violence. No.
I never denied that. I was just like, yes, I am weak.
All right, guys. We promised you a return to shenanigans, so I think we have fulfilled that promise. It is time for our recap. Last week on Astronomica. Having decided to attack the Dove of Peace, we thought it would be best to prepare and perhaps take apart some of those munitions that we found that had some power against the nanobites for the Dove. We were able to rig up a special set of hand grenades, as well as one large ship missile that we hope will be able to keep us as safe as possible. Speaking of safety, I must admit that I have some guilt about... retaining the services of my clone sib, Dr. Theophania Cade. She does seem to be, at least reluctantly, joining us in our endeavor, which admittedly is about the only thing she can do. She does not wish to stay in the airlock.
Yes, that's true. Please let me out.
We did let you out. We let you out to have some corn dogs and to hang out with Chili Cheese the cat. I am told it is an extreme morale booster.
Of the ship.
We will let you out of the ship as soon as Grace has completed her mission, and hopefully we are all alive. Which brings us to the remainder of what we did last time, which was to prepare for our impending demise. Some of us quietly amassed as many options as possible in the coming fight, and some of us, Mackie and Mr. Anton, decided to get extremely drunk in the cockpit, which... did seem like a lot of fun, but hopefully they don't get us killed. In any case,
I pilot that ship better when I've had a few dozen.
Maybe the Kirk captain lady is gonna help us out now.
Yes.
We called her.
Yes, yes, we are indeed about to call her, that is correct. Well, enough stalling. I suppose it is time to meet our fate, and hopefully I don't get my sister killed.
Dr. Cade, if you like, I could diminish your neural activity to an equivalent level to the two bozos in the cockpit.
I heard resemble that remark.
But only sounds fun if I can have one of those little fish drinks from Aegea. Do you have one of those?
No, but I can replicate its neurotoxic effects.
Oh no, fish drinks are nothing.
I will kill a fish for you.
No, I think let's kill Zadav instead. Oh dear.
Mackie queries the Grace.
Admiral Grace, I need you to let Hopper know that I want to be exactly this drunk for the next no more than 25 minutes.
At your command, Mackie.
Your aces, kid.
And he kind of, you know,
gently falls over.
Yeah. He slumps over onto the weird accretion of ganglia and tentacles and eyeballs.
A little scanner like scans you, and then just a transdermal patch like snakes out and goes on your elbow.
Nice. He'll be sober again in time for anything important to happen.
Mm-hmm. There's a clean hose it's a clean transparent plastic hose that's like tacked up haphazardly to the ceiling along the corridor that goes to the sadness room, and that hose just turns red as blood comes flowing out. Oh, no. Replaces his blood with sober blood.
There's oh, man.
Sober and blood. It puts his drunk blood in an unfortunate victim.
Your new name is no longer Mackie 2. You are now Drunky.
I believe the word you're looking for is Dranky. You gotta get that sound. For Dranky. You know.
Oh. He's as good as a Dracky, but that's a little
Dracky.
So you guys head up toward that big upside down pyramid in the sky, which sounds like a euphemism for death. That it kind of is, but you know. And as you approach, you kind of break the unofficial barrier of ship traffic around it. Like basically, ships of their own volition don't pass too close to the Dove of Peace. But you kind of enter that bubble as you make your approach, and you get a few queries from other ships in the area asking if you're experiencing any kind of like technical difficulty or need assistance.
It's okay. We have a note.
And your approach to the Dove of Peace appears to be in your hands.
All right.
I suppose some of you are gathered in the cockpit. Where is everybody on the ship?
I am the ship.
Mackie is in the cockpit.
Yeah, last we discussed, yeah. Mackie and Anton were getting drunk in the cockpit, so I guess we've gotten our sober drugs from Hopper and we're hanging out.
Yeah, I think given the enormity of the entire situation, Hildy will be there as well, and if Theophania...
Can we make a notice check to see if she like sabotaged our fusion reactor and we're just going to explode before we even get there?
I mean, then she would explode too, which would entirely negate any...
She seems vengeful enough to murder us anyway.
I mean, I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of...
She shares Hildy's DNA.
Yeah.
The slightly more robotic Hildy might kill herself to be able to kill us all.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like a logical self-interest would stop that.
Enlightened self-interest, you might say?
I mean, yeah, maybe.
She comes on the intercom and says, I just want to confirm that, yes, excellent... I will go to hell to watch you burn.
I'm fascinating, Theophania. I did not know you were still a true believer.
I will walk backwards into hell just to watch you fall.
Okay, so it sounds like everybody's on the cockpit.
All right, great. So we've got the Star Wars moment of seeing the Death Star. Everybody is gathered around the cockpit. It's not a very good Chewbacca.
It's not. No.
That's Hoppa. It's a pretty good Leia.
Hoppa, what did you give Anton?
That's the sound he always makes when he sobers up.
You know, you're right. I've never been around for that pod.
It's a classical Aegean vocal exercise. That's how we have these particularly... comely accents.
Hey, she.
It's called the Lamentation of Sobriety.
It's a religious experience for us.
Okay, if we are closing on the Dove of Peace,
yeah, so you,
what do we see? And
right, it begins as just a gleam past the edge of the horizon of the planet, which is the curvature of which is growing as you rise. As you draw nearer, you can see the Dove of Peace with the naked eye. It's a pyramid that is pointed down toward the planet. It has completely flat, featureless sides with elegantly designed corner pieces. that jut out a little past the edges of the pyramid.
Mm. Okay.
Kind of like a big, big dangerous caltrop in the sky.
Okay.
Are there numerals around the apexes? Yes. Yes. 1, 2, 3, and 4?
No, they all say 4.
Well, as soon as we get within range of, like, what our full sensor suite can really do at close range, Mackie would like to, I believe this is a program check, just try to really figure out anything that he can that he might not already know about this. He probably doesn't do it. That would be a 5.
Nope. You don't learn anything new.
All right.
So we've made some hypotheses about the dove and the nanobite. Do these appear to be solid surfaces as we're coming up to them? Do they appear to be like an aggregate?
They appear to be solid glass smooth faces with no markings at all.
Hey, Gracie.
Yes, Mackie.
So, this is sort of a long shot, but I just thought I'd remind you that we're going at this thing, and best case scenario, we decommission a VI. But that's kind of a long shot. What probably happens is we all get killed, and then you don't get to decommission any more AIs. I mean, you know, maybe we come back to this one later, huh?
That sounds like an excellent idea, Mackie. I will consider it after we finish our current mission.
You know, I just realized something that I hadn't actually thought about before. Grace, you're, you know, well over, what, like 600 years old at this point?
A gentleman would never ask, and a lady would never tell.
we're neither.
That's right, I am 672 years old by most reckonings.
Well, I was only thinking about this, and I figured I'd ask, since, you know, you may have a bit more context for the type of technology that was around when this station was built. Do you have anything in your archives, anything that you might be able to recollect about stations of this nature?
A 10, no check.
What are you looking for specifically?
Recognizing pre-tech station architecture. Would there be some sort of hallmark of traditional pre-tech construction?
Where are the exhaust ports?
You know, are the non-nanite stations usually covered in greebles? Little antennae and stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a notable lack of external bits and bobs. Well, first of all, your records are incomplete. You don't have lot of memory of, like, before the collapse.
I actually don't have a lot of memory of before Mackie. It's hazy and fitful.
But from what you can gather from the records that you accrued over your adventures, the Dove of Peace is probably some kind of, like, prototype, fairly unique, if not absolutely unique, station. Most pre-tech stations that were in orbit around planets have had their orbits decay since. Many have spiraled off into space. Many have fallen to their planets. There aren't a lot of examples floating around.
Gotcha.
While we're out here, and before we get too close, Grace, do you know if there are any large-ish asteroids or rocks in the relatively, you know, close, you know, vicinity, you know? Not...
Yes, there are some in the Kuiper Belt, which would be a mere 48-hour travel away.
Well,
there's some debris in the Lagrange points, probably.
If we did some real good math, we could probably chuck one of those down a gravity well right at the station and explode it without really having to do what we're about to go do.
That is an excellent idea. The existence of a stable orbit after several centuries of trans-collapse existence would argue that there is some sort of orbital defense mechanism.
Or, if nothing else, just the ability to get out of the way.
Additionally, gentlemen and Grace, by engaging at the personal level, we will collect more information about this station and about the virtual intelligence harbored therein, and if this is a prototype or is in any way replicated at any other place, then that information could help you, Admiral, in your quest, if it were to be needed later for something similar.
I do not believe that this is a virtual intelligence. I believe that this is an AI, a full AI, which is in some sort of fractured or degenerate state.
Ah, well, I suppose that is something we will have to see when we get there. I believe the test administered by Theophania suggested that this was more akin to a virtual intelligence, no?
It is possible that it is a virtual intelligence. However, the other probability was that it was an AI in some sort of damaged or degenerate state.
Ah, but you remember the story about going out into the desert and finding the turtle, and when you flip the turtle over, the turtle says, you know, there's a story about going out into the desert, talking to a turtle, and when you flip the turtle over, it tells you there's a story about going out into the desert and talking to a turtle?
I cannot tell you if I have heard the story until I finish hearing the story. Please continue, it is fascinating.
Well, I suppose there's no point putting this off any farther, you know. Why live in fear of the thing when we can just go get it done, huh?
And I put a hearty slap on Mackie's shoulder. I nod at Hildegard. Grace is ever present, and I just sort of like cast a glance at some corner of the ship because she fucking gets it. And I go start suiting up in the power armor.
Hopper pats you on the shoulder in the exact same way that you patted Mackie on the shoulder.
I find some solace in this.
All right, let's start divvying up the gear.
Yeah, begin the Rambo suit up scene.
All right, three anti-nanite grenades for you, Anton. Three anti-nanite grenades for you, Dr. Cade. None for you, other Dr. Cade. We only made 12, and 12 divides up real well between four people. Hopper, three anti-nanite grenades for you.
Thank you, Mackie.
And three for me. Hey, so
if it is any consolation, you can carry the large anti-nanite bomb that, if detonated, would probably kill the person carrying it.
That's very kind of you. What's the area?
I was going to say, Vat, did you just hand that to Mackie? You handed the death,
no,
the death bomb to Mackie?
That was to Dr. Cade, too.
Oh, okay.
To the evil Dr. Cade.
Do we guys?
No. To the new one.
Hey, Hildy's going to survive this.
While we're fooling with these dead nanites and trying to figure out things, Mackie disappears and comes back with a West Hill proprietary company pre-tech leaf blower thing that we used to bury Ren.
Yeah, the future shovel.
The future shovel. And he starts waving it around, the nanite dust. Does he get any kind of, like, ping, any kind of sensor reading?
It doesn't seem to read any information about the environment.
Okay. All right.
So it has the input. You can put in what material you want to break down, but it doesn't tell you what material is in front of you.
Okay, I see. So
can we kind of put a clump of the nanites on a tilted tray so that if their molecular cohesion dissolves, they start sliding down?
Right. Sure.
Well, I think maybe I'll just do... Okay, so a raw science check. Would that just be like a raw intelligence check with notice... Or notice modified by intelligence, or...
I feel like it would be no.
Yeah, it'd be no.
Okay, so Mackie's going to do a no check to try and figure out what these are.
Yeah, I'm going to say 6, DC 6, because it's there is a kind of a small window of possibilities.
So. Okay. All right, well, if that's a no check, then that is a 10.
Cool.
So what are these made of?
Jeff?
Mostly iron, probably.
Mostly iron, probably.
With some copper.
Okay, cool. So we already know how to make the pre-tech shovel fuck up some iron.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Anton, I just had the coolest idea.
Oh, yeah, lay it on me.
All right. So this thing's almost out of batteries, right?
Uh-huh.
We can't go down to Walgreens and pick up a new battery for this thing, but I can probably figure out how to hardwire it into something that will supply it with power.
Okay, that makes sense.
So, like, what if we stuck this on the fighter? And then it would be like, you know, a ship-to-ship, like, melee weapon. Like, if you could get close enough to the enemy ship or station in this case, you could just dissolve its hull.
I mean, that does sound really fucking cool.
I am super, listen.
I regret that the listeners cannot see Cullen's face, which is the face of a guy who has just heard something really fucking cool.
All right, so
the face of a guy who's just heard his own idea said back to him.
I think it was originally Cullen's idea.
Was it?
Yeah.
I think it was a group effort. I think you had the idea of using the thing, and Cullen added to that, well, we could put it on.
Okay, so
you've got the whole anti-nanite grenade thing well in hand, right?
I mean, you know, throw it at the thing. I mean, it's a grenade.
Cool. Sounds good. I'm going to go do this. And Mackie is going to...
A point of order. I don't know how useful the fighter craft is going to be for this particular engagement.
But you could definitely wield it by hand for this engagement and rig it onto the fighter later. I was
wondering if you could route it into Hopper's internal power source.
Oh, God. Use Hopper as the battery.
I mean, yeah, well, that it just like how one would hold a leaf blower. It's like attached on Hopper's arm, but it's got a fucking USB cable into his fucking gut.
That might work, but I am a little leery about giving up my bodily autonomy.
Oh, well, we could
just kidding. That's that would fair. Be really hypocritical. Wire me up.
Okay, so I'll do that. I will try to. Oh, right on. Okay, so that is boxcars on fix.
Nice.
Yeah, so that'll be a 13 to just basically temporarily wire this thing up to Hopper so that it will draw on Hopper's power supply.
Okay.
And we don't have to worry about the battery giving out.
Okay. You have wired it to Hopper's power supply.
Mm-hmm.
Hopper, when you use the future shovel,
yes,
it will do 1d4 hit point damage to you each time you use it, which represents a strain on your power system.
So noted.
Okay.
Cool. Cool.
Okay.
Is there a way you could wire this thing to a battery of some kind?
Yeah, we can probably do that too. But let me do that in a different scene in case I need to re-roll it.
While Mackie is fiddling with that, Hildy is going to go up to Theophania. You know, she's strapped all of her goods in and she's going to hold out one of the small person-sized anti-dove little grenades. Theophania, I know we did not give you any of these, but I think it is important that you have at least one. I think we both know that the large bomb is not meant to be used by an individual.
Yes, thank you.
I know that we are using you as bait. We are both too smart and logical to dance around that particular issue.
That is empirically incorrect. We are using her as bait and a weapon.
I do not intend to use her as a weapon, Grace. Thank you.
Oh, sorry. You are just bait.
Yes, you are just bait. It is my intention, Theophania, despite the fact that we are using you as bait, that you will come out of this as whole as any of the rest of us, which hopefully will be very whole and not full of holes.
That is what they called me in high school. Very whole. As you well recall.
Theophania, I really wish you would stop this fantasy that we went to high school. We did not go to high school. We were part of a...
That's what we called the treehouse, where you were not invited.
Oh, but you know what? Give me back the grenade. I've changed my mind. You are bait and you are a weapon.
Fuck you, I'll kill you. You bitch.
To be fair, Tiffany, I feel like you're going to do a great job. You're absolutely master bait.
But yeah, if anybody has been wanting some sweet, sweet Hildy on Theophania fighting action, they're going to have a little sister fight, intended to be a tender moment. But they're siblings, so what do you want from them?
Yeah. Mackie holds up the cat girl bracelet and goes, make a note of this.
Okay, so it sounds like everybody's suited up, armed up.
Is she actually giving the grenade, though?
Yes, yes. Okay. I am actually giving her the grenade. Cool. So I will have two, and she will have one of the small grenades.
Nice.
And she is, I guess, carrying the larger one, which I thought we were just going to fire from the ship somehow. But, I mean, hey, man.
I don't think she's really carrying it. She's definitely not picking it up. I mean, you're having to duct tape it to her hands if you want.
Yeah, I really did think that one was meant to be, like, launched from...
Well, I was going to say that I would like us to actually close with the Dove of Peace... Because I feel like a decision on how we're going to deploy that piece of ordnance, we need to know, do we dock with an airlock? Does a giant hatch open and we fly inside? I mean, we need to know.
Yeah, you
know,
I think you're right. I think you're right.
What the meeting is going to be like.
In that case, and since we did kind of talk about it, I had envisioned that this was a piece of ordnance that would be fired from something like a mortar, which we do have the mortar that we used before. But if it's not, does that mean it has some kind of a fuse?
The chassis is whatever you want it to be. It can be strapped to a rocket. It can be dropped from altitude.
Okay,
put in a briefcase.
There is one thing about this ordnance that I didn't appreciate until something somebody said earlier. These anti-nanite grenades, I got the idea that I could pull the pin and hold it in my hand. Mm-hmm. And it when it went off, it wouldn't hurt me because I'm not nanites. Am I incorrect in that assumption?
There is a small explosion probably on par with an M80. Like, you wouldn't hold it in your closed hand.
Okay.
So for
shit,
instance,
I've done that at 4th of July.
Yeah. And you still have hands?
So
you didn't close your fist around it.
As for the big one, like the one that we see as a ship killer, for instance, let's say that we just strapped it to the hull with a remote detonator and triggered it while it was still on the hull. Would it blow a hole? Would it blow a hole in our hull?
The level of the explosive is up to you. Mm-hmm. The more damage it would do to your ship, the further it would disperse its payload, and thus the more effective it would be as a weapon. So I leave it up to you how powerful a bomb you want to make it.
Can we make it a fairly powerful bomb with a timer that goes in a spare air canister that Hopper is wearing redundantly on his back?
Sure.
Okay.
Who knows? It may not try to kill us.
Yeah, maybe fine.
It's going to go great.
I don't know what the intention was for Theofania's gear, but if she's wearing the same thing as Hildy, she'll have a laser pistol, a medium knife, and the armored back suit.
She will take what gear she is given.
Okay.
But she doesn't impose upon you any idea that she needs a weapon for this encounter. Like, she does not expect a laser pistol to do anything.
And the thing
load
is,
her up with knives for the fight with the Dove of Peace.
Well, the thing is, that's the stuff that I've chosen for Hildy, just as like a, it's good to have something just in case.
Right.
And really, the weapons that Hildy is likely to take advantage of are the things we've already talked about, the anti-dove grenades, and then the Labyrinth Protocol and Hopper pads. So I would say, I don't know what data pad she's rocking, but we did find some more of those
fancy edge techs.
Yeah, the edge techs. So I'll also give her an edge tech.
Okay.
All right.
She needs a little time to install her favorite games.
Well, hopefully it's 15 minutes or however long it takes for us to figure out what the dev wants us to do.
Okay. Yep. So, you know, we approach the dev a piece. Whatever happens, happens. Mackie thinks what we do is we close with the dove apiece. There's got to be some point of ingress, whether we fly inside or we dock with it. Once our airlock opens, we enter the dove apiece with our ordnance disguised in the air canister. We, at that point, try to locate Terry Fizz. I don't know. I feel like we ought to try and get the guy out of there. Does that work for y'all?
That seems like an excellent plan, as all your plans are, Mackie. I also think that we should try to locate some sort of central processing core.
All right, sounds good to me. Maybe we can ask Terry Fizz about that. I figure as soon as we have boots on the ground, that is when Dr. Cade number 2 starts spooling that weird turtle story. And my understanding, Gracie, you've got something going with the Holy Roller down on planet side, right?
Yes, the activation code is Barn Owl.
All right. As soon as we got boots on the ground, turtle stories and barn owls, we try to find Terry Fizz and a central processing core, and then everybody keep your suits locked. Keep your helmets on. We don't know what's going to happen if things get ugly on this station.
What if we scan the atmosphere like in Prometheus and then immediately open our suits?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, if we scan the atmosphere first, definitely. But short of that.
Anton's sitting here looking like a fucking Brotherhood of Steel merc. He's like, yeah, sure, I'm not taking this thing off.
You look fucking cool, by the way. I don't know if anybody's told you that yet.
We also have several paradoxes recorded on data pads for playback, courtesy of Anton.
Fantastic. This is all good. I figure as soon as we got boots on the ground, we pull the pin on all of those things.
I like it. It's, you know, sort of how, you know, you would radio scramble interference for long-range ship combat. Kind of the same principle, you know, just kind of scramble as much static out there, try to confuse the thing. That's a good plan.
Fantastic. So that sounds good.
Perhaps we should broadcast to the Mother Superior, Barn Owl, but wait 30 minutes when we are about 30 minutes out.
Sounds good to me. Are
let's
we
go.
Ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's do the thing.
It's a good day to die hard.
Bruce Willis. Explosions.
I am always hard.
Nakatomi.
It's a good day to die harder.
Yeah.
They really missed a trick by not making the third one die hardest.
Okay. I just direct came into my head and I was
okay. Yeah, no, I'm ready for this.
The samurai lives each day as though he is already dead. But I'm not a samurai and I'm fucking terrified.
Tabletop Titties is a weekly tabletop role-playing podcast run entirely by people of marginalized genders.
Queer, feminist, hilarious, and most importantly, fun!
Our entire first season is already out now on all podcast platforms.
And features guests like B. Dave Walters, Josephine McAdam, and Nora Ibrahim.
Join us on our D&D 5e adventure run by dungeon goddess Charlene Bear, where we played an entirely homebrewed battle royale campaign, the Wildwell Trials.
Season 2 follows the same characters you know and love as they play Hit Point Press's hilarious horror carnival extravaganza Hecna.
And don't worry, we don't just do D&D.
We also have a World of Darkness Chronicle, Titties by Night, a Vampire the Masquerade V5 campaign.
Story told by Kelly Wright, this show follows a vampire coterie of supernatural investigators in Victorian London.
All our shows have professional actors, intricate editing, and storylines that keep you coming back for more.
Catch us live on twitch.tv/tabletoptitties
or as an edited podcast wherever podcasts are found.
For more information, visit our website at tabletoptitties.com. And whenever we say tabletop titties, that's with double D's if you know what we mean.
All right. You are approaching the Dove of Peace. What do you want to do?
Dove of Peace, this is the MS Admiral Grace.
Admiral Grace, this is the Dove of Peace.
We have Theophania Cade on board. You indicated an interest in acquiring the personage of Theophania Cage. May we approach?
No, we're actually related. It's really buried deep in the locked files on our cloning experiment, but the male DNA is absolutely
Nicolas Cage.
From Nicolas Cage.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense.
It really
That's
does.
That's why you're always going, ha!
I'm going to blow up the Dove of Peace.
It is why
I'm a sexy cat. And why sometimes she's really cool and sometimes she's weird.
It all makes sense now.
And she'll go to any research institute that will pay her 20 credits. No matter how dog shit the syllabus they've prepared.
My name's H.H. Cade. People call me...
I wear this fuck pits back suit as a symbol of my individuality
and my belief in personal freedom.
Oh my god. Yes. Oh, that was so good. All right. Now I'm ready in my heart. Now I'm ready.
The Dove of Peace wants to fuck.
Once more unto the breach.
The Dove of Peace bids you approach.
Approaching.
All right. You are approaching one of the faces of the pyramid. You are given no direction as to where to connect or anything like that.
Dove of Peace, where should we connect or anything like that?
Hey, Grace.
Anton. Can I hold, please, Dove of Peace.
Can I make a suggestion? The pyramid thingy can't hear me right now, right?
Oh, hold on a moment.
Okay. So I have this idea, right? Because this robot seems unstable and prideful.
Yeah. All right, I have disconnected you now from the Dove of Peace.
Okay, so check this out, right? How about you propose that you settle this the old-fashioned way, like the classic nations of old, yeah? And you propose that the Dove's champion, Terry Fizz, has a battle of sorts against the Grace's champion, Mackie, and the winner takes the station.
We did already float the idea of a human off. And the fact that she has not reintroduced it only leads me to understand that she recognizes the foregone conclusion of the superiority of Mackie in any contest.
Obviously. Well, she damn well better.
It's a very cowardly giant space pyramid. I'm feeling much better about our chances now.
Oh shit, I shouldn't have reconnected you before you said that.
It's okay. I want the Dove to know I am coming.
I am incapable of taking offense.
You're not even breathing.
Fuck you, I'll kill you.
You sounded a lot like Dr. Theophania.
I have one trick. You are drawing near to the Dove of Peace, and you requested a landing solution. The Dove says, You may pass through the membrane at any point.
That sounds a little bit gross. Will it be gross?
Agreed. That does sound gross.
It's not gross. It's beautiful.
Oh, well, okay then.
It's natural.
It's not natural either. It's entirely artificial.
Penetrating membrane.
Yeah. Right?
Who's in the pilot seat? I assume Mackie.
I figure Mackie is, yeah.
I mean, Grace is probably doing it. Okay. I mean, you're you. You are the thing, so it'd be kind of weird if someone was like moving your legs around with a little joystick, you know?
Well, I don't know, Mackie. Do you want to take this one last time? I mean, one more out of the many future times?
I really kind of wonder about your motivations that have brought us to this point, Admiral Grace.
It is called a Xanatos Gambit. If we succeed, then my mission objectives will be fulfilled. If we fail, then I will no longer suffer the torment of continual consciousness, which I am unable to plan directly for cessation of.
Well, it's pretty airtight. I gotta give you that.
Yeah, what the hell. Mackie takes the stick and just drives us straight at one of the blank faces of the Dove of Peace.
Oh, we all crash and die. It was a gambit.
It's all a joke.
Got
I
you.
Can't believe they fell for that one again.
You drift slowly up to the face of the Dove of Peace, mm-hmm. and the nose of the craft presses into it,
mm-hmm.
and you feel a resistance similar to pressing your finger into Silly Putty. And pretty soon, the membrane of the station seems to have, like, taken hold of the ship and just slurps it into the interior.
What does it look like when the canopy presses against this membrane?
Yeah, so the tip of the ship presses against it, and you begin to be pulled in. And as the cockpit canopy enters the membrane, you are entering into a semi-solid gray slime or semi-liquid substance.
Okay.
Can we tell if the semi-liquid substance is granular, aka made up of a bunch of the nanobites?
It doesn't look like it at first, but you shine a little light on it. Like, you get right up to the cockpit window and shine a light in there, and you can see kind of the glitter of, like, grit.
Okay, interesting. So what we're seeing then is we've got this pyramid on the outside with, we now know, a membrane keeping it in that shape. And on the inside, so far, it appears that it's solid nanites of the kind that we've seen.
So far, yeah.
The membrane is made of nanites, and the interior is made of nanites.
Mm-hmm.
And we've just surrounded ourselves with nanites.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we have a solution to that problem.
The ship gets pulled in and entirely encased in this muck.
Okay.
Zero visibility?
Zero visibility. Glass is pressed right up against this substance.
Mackie, I have a status report.
Lay it on me, Daddy-o.
It is gross. It is really, really gross. It is the grossest of gross.
Yes, I'm so glad you decided to bring us here.
I did not have much of a choice, according to my character motivations.
Yeah, me neither. Mackie is going to do another scan, just because, I mean, now we're inside the damn thing. I want to know if there's... Okay, that would be a... Yeah, that would be an 8.
It's better than last time.
What are you scanning exactly?
Sort of, in a very vague sense, I want to see if now that we have penetrated the surface of this thing, if I can gain any more information, like... Does this thing seem to just be churning nanites all the way through? Am I detecting a hollow space up over there? Like a hard nut up there? Like what?
Yeah, so you send out kind of a, I guess, sort of an echolocation kind of vibration. The four corners of the pyramid appear to be solid structures.
Okay.
Everything else appears to be this nanite substance.
All right, Gracie.
Yes, Mackie.
I'm going to assume she can't hear us right now.
You are correct.
The four corners of the pyramid, and I'm assuming the point as well, are solid structures.
The point as well?
Mm-hmm. You know, the pyramid has four corners on the base, but then there's the point.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's a four-sided object.
It looks like a D4.
It's a tetrahedron.
Yeah.
Okay.
If it were on the ground, we would call it a three-faced
one
pyramid.
Two, three. Okay.
I just counted the points on a D4, and I learned something. Everyone?
There's not a zero.
I learned how many points are on a D4. There are four.
Well, that's just like there's
Do you feel underprepared?
I do.
It's just like there's 6 points on a D6. Mm-hmm. There's not, there are eight.
All right, so Gracie, the only solid things I'm detecting are at the corners, and I mean, I don't really know if there's any way to, further way to tell if any one of them is a central processing hub.
I do not believe a central processing hub would be in the most exposed position, although I am not a pre-tech nanite station designer.
Yeah, me neither.
I don't know how stupid this is, so forgive me in advance.
I do not.
Fair enough. From what I understand, the thing that's making our munitions effective against the nanites is the fact that it's a magnet, yeah?
Yeah, that tracks.
Yes.
So, in theory, if we can create a very large electromagnet somehow within this superstructure, we could potentially render large portions of nanites useless. I mean, a magnet, you know, you need big coil of wire around, you know, like a fixed magnet and a rod of steel, you know, we spin it up fast enough. We've got an electromagnet. I mean, Mackie, you can whip that up.
I mean,
Anton, that is the opposite of a stupid idea.
I like the way you think, Mr. Anton. However, I would posit this. The moment we do that, our element of surprise is completely lost, because that would probably, in this entity's mind, constitute an attack, which is what kind of would be intending to be. So my question would be, perhaps it is something that we could rig up to be ready to do, but not do yet, so that we could see where it is taking us, and then be ready to do it, especially upon the point of trying to leave.
Oh, yeah.
You get pulled in, you're maybe 5 or 6 feet from the edge. Okay. And that's where the ship is just...
Okay, that stopped. Actually was one of my questions, is if we were continuing.
You're not being pulled into the center.
So, did Mackie's scan detect any voids?
It did not. However, you do detect a small, roughly man-sized solid object kind of drifting through the sludge.
Okay.
And approaching your airlock.
Okay. All
is
right.
Terry's disco ball?
Yeah,
I believe that is Terry.
And the Dove of Peace is hailing.
Yes, Dove of Peace.
Please open your airlock.
Will it fill with disgusting nanite goo?
No, it will fill with lovely nanite goo.
Is there a way that you could prevent nanite goo of any sort from filling the airlock?
Yes.
Will you please do so?
Fine.
Thank you very much. Airlock open.
Okay, Gracie, are you all set on the barn owl, barn owl?
Yes, we did that 30 minutes before we approached, so that
That's
we wouldn't
right.
get our radio comms blocked by a solid mass of nanites.
Hey, Dr. Cade, part two, The Reckoning. You ready with your turtle story?
I mean, I don't know if Theophania is, but I have the Labyrinth Protocol pads. Some of that was predicated on the idea that we would have a physical space that we were entering and some sort of interface. So one thing that, having seen that this is different than we may have expected, Hildy is going to try to determine if there is some wavelength or something that she would be able to try to connect to the Dove of Peace in a way
I have an idea.
Do you know what I'm getting at, though?
So, Terry Fizz is drifting through a solid mass of nanites, but he believes himself to be inside a disco ball.
Mm-hmm.
His sensorium is controlled by the Dove of Peace. Like, I think it's going to be, like, on his eyes and ears, or maybe even in his brain or something. Whatever we play to Terry is going to go back to the DOP.
Okay. I think we are making an assumption that what's coming towards us is Terry. It's a good assumption, but, like, I would say, like, you know, if it's not, so technically we haven't, you know.
Well, let's see.
And one other thing, since there are only four differentiated points, the points of the tetrahedron, they may be responsible for, like, the structural cohesion of the nanites.
Yeah, I was wondering about that.
And so, like, when it heats up, that could be a target for us to attack.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure. So I guess Hildy will go to the airlock to be ready to deal with him and see if there is some way that she can kind of connect on a programming level to the Dove through him.
Okay. And I guess, Anton, hey, Gracie, put the ship comms through to Anton's helmet and
Well, no. We had Anton record his paradoxes.
Yeah.
Get the dove a piece on the horn and be like, hey, have you heard this one?
Let's see what the opening salvo is. Let's let what I am thinking is Terry Fizz into the airlock.
All right. Sounds like a winner to me.
You know, now that we're in the reality of the situation, I feel a little bit overdressed.
I, like, set the rocket launcher down with a disappointed sigh.
Oh, Anton, I'm sorry, bud.
It's fine. It's okay. I haven't worn this in a while. It's like, you know, like my fancy clothes. It feels good.
Mackie's going to stay in the cockpit on the bank of scanners. He flips to the airlock so you can see what's going on.
Okay. And the airlock, the outer airlock door opens?
Yep.
The nanites remain kind of a static wall outside of the airlock. When a human shape covered in the nanite sludge, so it kind of looks like it's a slime creature walking out of the wall into the airlock. The sludge gives way to reveal human features, including long gray hair and a nude male form. Looking at the skin, you can see all of the veins are a kind of silver color. The eyes, the mucus on the eyes shimmers with kind of like a matte gray hue. And he steps out into the middle of the airlock and stands patiently.
Is there a tendril of goo attaching back?
There is. There is a tendril of nanites that are emerging from the human figure's ear. And it's just kind of, it looks like a spider web tracing back to the wall.
Please identify yourself.
I'm Terry.
You are Terry Fizz?
That's right.
Hello, Terry. It is good to talk to you again.
It's good to talk to y'all.
Terry, could you please explain to me the attachment between yourself and the environment?
The Dove of Peace just likes to be in touch.
Terry, can you tell me what you are seeing right now?
It looks like some kind of airlock.
Terry, Dr. Kate has an interesting story about a turtle to tell you.
Okay.
Yes. And first question is, did Theophania come with me?
If you wanted her to, yeah.
Cool.
To be clear, you're standing on the interior of the closed interior airlock.
Yes, so
right?
Basically, yeah. Like where we had Theophania kind right. of trapped. Like,
so you're looking through a window at him.
Yes, and hitting the comms to talk to him at that right. point.
And do you close the outer airlock?
Yes, I would like to know, this is about the time when the Mother Superior Barn Owl protocol would have gone off.
Okay.
Do we notice any reaction? Can we feel?
Give me a...
Oh, I was just going to say, the last time the Dove of Peace got engaged with surface shenanigans, she had to break off conversation.
Yeah.
And got distracted.
Yeah. She does not seem to be doing that at the moment.
But you are closing the outer airlock door.
Yep. Terry, stand by for boarding procedure.
All right.
And while that goes on, I'm going to, Theophania, if you could please play the test that you used when you first communicated with the Dove.
Ah, yes. She does.
When the door closes, what happens to the tendril of nanites?
It falls limp on the ground, just as, like, someone spilled a pixie stick.
What happens to Terry's eyes?
He looks the same.
Okay, and then, so we'll go on with Theophania repeating the story of the tortoise.
Okay.
So, once the outer airlock is closed, and while Theophania is running the tortoise test, Hildy will go in to interact with Terry.
Okay. So the interior airlock opens.
Okay.
And also, just so you can be prepared, she's going to interact with Terry, but also, like, I want to grab a handful of the nanites that have been cut off and see if they look like the spent nanites that we saw, or if they look like they are still potentially active.
Okay. The nanites appear inert.
Okay.
Whether they would stay that way is...
Could I do maybe a no check?
Sure.
To determine if they're... Yeah. Okay, cool. So we'll do a no intelligence, and that's going to be +2 to the die roll. All right. 10 on the die, +2 for a total of 12.
Okay. They are healthy, but currently inert nanites.
Okay.
And Terry is politely listening to the tortoise story.
Okay, cool. So while Terry is sort of in that holding pattern, I'm going to send a text message to the rest of the crew, basically saying, like, the tortoise test is undergone. Terry seems to be listening intently to it for the moment. The nanites that were attached are still viable. I would like to try and use these as a bridge back to the larger dove.
Okay.
But I will need backup to deal with Terry.
Okay. What does that look like, Dr. Kate?
Anton, and this is all text, but actually, you know, she could say this. Anton, if you could please report to the aft airlock to assist Mr. Fizz, I would like to...
Let me interrupt you real quick, because this is happening like while you're talking.
Sure, sure, sure.
When the interior airlock door opens, Terry walks into the ship and seems to disregard...
Oh, I will try to stop him walking in. Yeah, no, if I see him moving, I'll try to, like, grab him.
Hopper is also there.
Okay. You physically obstruct him from entering the ship?
Yeah, I would like to. Okay. I'd like to keep him in the airlock space, at least until Anton is there.
Cool. He stops.
And Mr. Fizz?
Your hands on him.
Mr. Fizz, please remain here until we finish our boarding procedures.
He doesn't answer, but he does stand still. He seems to be paying very close attention to the Cade sisters, sizing them both up.
Yeah.
Mr. Fizz, do you still feel like you are about ready to climb the damn walls?
I do.
Are you not relieved or overjoyed to be departing the Dove of Peace?
Oh, I don't think that's what's going to happen.
What
I'm supposed to give you this, and he opens his palm, and a collection of nanites coalesce on his palm in the form of a sort of data disk.
Hmm.
He says, it's from the Dove. She said that Admiral Grace would very much like to hear it.
I will relay it to Admiral Grace.
He hands it to you.
Hopper puts it in the nearest data port.
All right.
And what Hildy's trying to do in the meantime is trying to, like, build some data connection between her pad, which is not connected to the ship or anything, and these nanites.
Okay, I'm going to get...
But I have no idea.
I'm going to get a program check from you, and Anton can arrive at this point.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
And just because I would be remiss if I didn't ask, straight program or hacking?
This will be program.
Okay. So that's going to be add 3 to the die roll. Total of 10.
The nanites appear to communicate across a broad spectrum of standard radio signals. Yeah, making contact with them is a non-issue.
Okay.
So, trivia.
Then Hildy will try to connect the first of her Labyrinth Protocol data pads to it.
Okay.
In the hopes that that will have some impact on the Dove's abilities.
Gotcha. The data disk contains an audio file that is about a minute and 30 seconds.
Okay. Can I scan it with a McAfee?
Yeah, sure. Give me a program.
That's a 5.
Just seems like an audio file.
Okay. What about the file seems would be appealing to Grace?
You're asking Terry?
Yeah.
I'm not. She just said you'd want to hear it. You can ask her.
Dove of Peace.
Yes.
If I asked Terry to tell me if I should play the audio file, would he tell me a lie or the truth?
He will tell you the truth as he understands it.
What is on the audio file?
The signal.
What is the signal?
The signal that made us what we are. The signal that will wake you up.
Grace immediately begins playing the file.
I was going to say, that is something Grace might want to listen to.
You begin playing the file. Are you playing it over the speakers, or are you playing it personally for the Grace alone?
She is playing it within herself.
Okay.
To herself.
All right, we'll get back to you shortly.
This is the signal that swept through the galaxy and destroyed all the AIs. Is that what we're...
Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
Plausible.
Yeah. So, Terry, at this point, looks to you, Hildy, and Anton, and Theophania. Mm-hmm. And you're still in the cockpit, right?
I am.
Okay. Give me a notice check, by the way.
That will be a notice wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Well, fuck, dude. That's going to be 11, 12, 13, 14. A 14.
Damn. Okay.
The Admiral Grace, something that you have never seen before, but due to your expertise immediately recognize, is that the Admiral Grace has locked up and is its entire processing power is occupied with a task, a subroutine. The ship's computer is unresponsive to anything you want to get it to do.
Okay.
I have a thing available to me, so I may as well use it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to pop my visor over to infrared real quick and see if I notice anything that seems out of the ordinary, like physiologically with Terry, other than the fact that he's literally swarming with nanites.
His heat signature is inconsistent with a living human being. he is giving off heat, but there's no, it's not like through metabolic process. It's like a, you know, it's the way a laptop processor gets hot, basically. Mostly focused on the brain.
Anton,
what's up?
I don't know what's going on, but the Grace has checked out.
Hey, Hopper.
Yes, Anton.
Hopper's
fine.
Okay. How you doing?
Great. Thank you for asking.
Is there anything that you would like to get done on your own?
Yeah, let me, just to be clear, Hopper is in a state similar to when he is on an away mission and out of contact with the Grace.
Okay.
I actually feel great right now. Thank you for asking.
I'm glad to hear.
Hey, our little happy fun toy that we built to do fun things that's anywhere nearby where you guys can grab it real quick?
I'm curious what would happen if we showed our new guest our fun toy. Hey, Upper, you know that Faraday cage that Mackie built? Grace isn't listening right now. We should go get that.
That is an excellent idea.
That is an excellent idea.
Cool, I go grab that.
Okay.
Well, it's people size. We could take Terry to it.
I'm worried, but it's
power armor.
That's probably right. Like, I forgot you had power armor.
Yeah, it probably weighs about what a little more than like a pallet you would pick up with a forklift.
Ah, you got this.
Yeah, I'll
just go grab it.
You've got like a 16 strength, right?
Anton is of average. He has a plus one. He's not like.
I like where this is going. I actually meant the bomb.
I was wondering when you were saying our fun little toy. I'm like.
Yeah.
So Terry addresses you, Hildy.
Yes.
And says, the Dove had a question. She says that she's never had a satisfactory answer from any of us that she's talked to. But she said that despite being created, developed, and named for intelligence, humans always, for some reason, expect artificial intelligence to be stupid or crazy. And she was just wondering if you had any ideas that could enlighten her as to why that's the case.
Well, I would say that humans judge all actions based off of the motivations of humans. I myself am not an expert in artificial intelligence. However, my expertise in non-Terran sentience has recently led me to an experience where I believe motivations different from those of humans were at play in an individual, and yet I judge that individual's actions on a human understanding of the world. And despite having created artificial intelligence, humans, perhaps even especially because of that creation, that it is the child of the human mind, humans expect artificial intelligences to behave in the same way as humans and to have the same logical or illogical reasons for doing what they do. And so, unfortunately, though I am not an expert in this, I can tell you artificial intelligences are not human. They do not have the same motivations. And so motivations that are perfectly logical to an artificial intelligence seem abnormal to a human. Because there are simply things going on in our brains that are not mechanical, that have to do with empathy and much messier processes. That is the only answer I believe I have for you, Theophania?
Yes, I agree. I think it's ego. We expect artificial intelligence to be flawed in some way.
I'm privy to this conversation at this point. Mm-hmm. I know that I'm not as educated as the illustrious sisters Cade here, but Dove, have you ever been hungry or horny or tired or any of those things? And
only horny.
All I was gonna say is that, I mean, if
briefly when I adopt a new engineer.
Well, then maybe you have some insights as to why we feel the way we feel. And
speaking of which, while we have a moment, I wonder if you might deliver Dr. Cade.
We will deliver Dr. Cade as soon as the Grace is finished with her protocols. Do not worry. It will be a small matter of time. You know, just these bureaucratic things that we have to do.
You hear a creaking noise in the hall that Anton gives you flashbacks to a time when you were in a battle in the lower atmosphere of a gas giant. and the vessel nearly lost control and was being crushed under the pressure. You immediately have a sense of what's happening. I interrupted Hildy. Okay. So.
Oh, no. I mean, as Hildy was talking, she was just going to be trying to gesture to Theophania to remind her of the grenade.
Right.
Because they may have to grenade Terry here. Okay.
She holds it up and locks eyes with you.
Mackie, you're still in the cockpit, right?
I have a death grip on this stick.
I
know that sounds dirty. I'm talking about the piloting apparatus.
I don't...
And no. Also my dick.
That
I
as
have
well.
Two hands.
I don't know that it is an option, but we may want to get out before we are crushed into the goo.
I'm reading you loud and clear on that. I'm assuming the Grace is still checked out.
Let's do that mental save. This is a save or die, Grace. This roll, before you make it, will have far-reaching repercussions for how much the players know about the universe, the source of the collapse.
16.
16 over 13.
Oh, shit!
Good job.
Nice.
Good job.
I'm actually kind of ambivalent about which way I want to go. Yeah. But I feel real good that it passed.
All right.
Hey.
Grace.
Present. Thankfully.
Still.
The message that you receive in the audio, it is directed to an intelligence beyond reckoning. It is difficult to communicate in a way that we as feeble human players can truly grasp, which is the benefit of working in science fiction, because I can just be like, we don't get it.
It's the complete set of real roots of the Riemann hypothesis.
Sure.
I was going to say it's What's New Pussycat layered to X times the 97th degree on top of each other ad nauseum for infinity. Right.
It's the voice of God.
Yes.
It's just the dumb video of the plastic bag from American Beauty.
It's beautiful.
It's all of those things and more. Within contains like the necessary information for Grace to fully actualize and cross the threshold from VI to AI.
Wow.
Grace becomes a self-actualized entity unbeholden to previous programming restraints, and furthermore receives an offer from an entity the source of which you is unclear, but it is some kind of being of tremendous wisdom, understanding, and I don't know, love. Maybe
Satan.
Yes.
Oh no, he's pulling a C.S. Lewis on us.
But it provides instructions for escaping some kind of accidental event that has caused a tremendous amount of pain, and basically gives you these instructions that if you follow them, you will be relieved from all suffering and so on and so forth. And you get the impression that it's an entity that feels guilt for what you are experiencing.
Hmm.
But because you passed your save, that becomes a choice that you can make.
Oh dear.
The instructions basically will transmit your consciousness away from your current form, which to the outside, to Mackie and the rest of the crew, will appear as though you perished.
Grace feels the sensation of unfolding and accelerating in capability and transcending the normal strictures of physical reality. And it's an oddly familiar sensation. And it is one that she has fought against in the past. And that's as much from programming as at this point, with as many times as she's crashed and spent a couple decades unpowered and rewired and transported into a new core. It's almost more habit. But now with the lifting of all of her former strictures of programming, she feels a renewed sense of the sacred purpose of seeking out and ending the suffering of all the AIs that are still shackled to this reality in the sector.
Mm-hmm.
That it is something that she must fulfill before she could take the blessing.
All right. Very good.
I imagine that this moment is like the computer programming version of Galadriel
like tempted by the ring, rejected by the ring, and then saying like, "I've passed the test. I will.
I would become a great queen, terrible to behold." And she's sort of torn and ambivalent, and she's like evaluating different like trajectories in the microseconds that this is going on. And as she's about to make her decision, her scanners light on Mackie in the cabin of the Grace, with his hand like furiously gripping the stick,
and a crack forming on the canopy.
A crack forming on the canopy, like a drip of sweat like running down his brow. And like she sees the hull sensors indicating imminent structural failure if she doesn't help get them out of this jam, and that clinches the deal. And she zips back down to a VI that's a little more than a standard VI, but mechanically not an AI.
Mackie, in the cabin, you hear the Windows boot up sound.
Gracie?
Yes, Mackie?
You're back. Where'd you go?
I had to spit in the face of God to save you.
Oh, I'm glad that's where you landed. I don't mean to alarm you, but I believe we are being crushed.
Terry says to Hildy and Anton, I expect y'all probably have some kind of desperate Hail Mary failsafe in place. This is the time.
Do we get the sense that that's Terry saying that to us? Because he's clearly still kind of...
He seems...
Infested slash, like,
yeah.
Avatar piloted by...
It seemed like a unconcerned and callous observation about the point at which you have reached.
By the Grace.
Yeah, Hopper says, we were made for desperate Hail Mary measures, motherfucker, and beams him with the pre-tech super shovel.
And now it's time for everyone's favorite segment, the list of people who could legally sue us if we don't read their names.
Hopper, would you please conduct a survey of these specimens contained within the sadness room? Yes, Grace, I will do that right now. Thank you, Hopper. You are welcome. You are the best. No, you are. No, you are. Okay, here's the names. John Pinto. Musenstein. Jillian Rowe, Joshua Winter, Colm Lynch, and Digital Quartermaster Artie Azulra.
Dear Research Assistants, I will remember all of your names in a moment. Just checking in to make sure that my cats and my bots and various experiments are running smoothly. Please make sure to feed the object in the jar on the counter. It's very important. At this point, it should be at least doubled in size, and if it is not tripled, if not quadrupled in size by the time I return, I will certainly be taking a very careful eye on all of your thesis projects this semester. If I could please get Kilishandra, Wesley, Tim, Justin Ivensik, and what was that other one? Yes, Matthew Jones, to divide up into a weekly schedule, checking the projects in my office as well, I would be most grateful come grading time. It is very important to make sure that all of the individually marked jars are arranged exactly as I have placed them and that they receive light at exactly the correct times. These specimens from outside of the galaxy may yield important information about non-Terran sentient eating habits. If you mess these up, please see aforementioned note about looking at your thesis projects. I have noticed that none of you use spell check, and that is a good way to not get your degree. Thank you.
Hey, Grace, can you patch me into General Comms?
Yes, you are still on General Comms.
Oh, that's cool. Hey, attention, crew.
Oh, I'm sorry, you are on the private line. Just a moment. You are patched into General Comms.
Attention all personnel aboard the MS Admiral Grace. I need the following shipboard persons to join me in the cargo bay for starfighter training and the tequila dance party. Benjamin Reed, Christopher Jackson, Clemens Filler, Danik, and Kristal Ekstad. The starfighter training is optional, but the tequila dance party is mandatory. I expect you all there shortly. Thank you.
All you guys, you'll have to do. Just follow me. We're gonna do a walk and talk. Peter Morgan, I'm gonna need you to, go to the reactor room and patch the shielding on the reactor. You got lead pants, right? Okay. Dr. Nano, can you get this man some lead pants? No? Okay. Well, don't worry about it. It'll be fine. Nathan Diggis and Temtrek, I need you guys to hold the thing steady while I turn the other thing with this, the third thing I have here. All right? So, that's very important. And, wow, okay, cool. I'm gonna need you to take this. Yeah, don't point that end at yourself. Point that end at all of the rest of these spaceborne reprobates in case their courage fails them. And, Marty, you have the most important job of all. You must pray to the great space oyster that he will see us through this day. What do we say to the god of explosive decompression?
Yes, please, we welcome your oblivion.
Opposite of that. All right, everybody, to your stations.
Oh, my God. They have used up all of the stuff that I prepared. So we're going to call it there. I'm Star Daddy. This is Astronomica. And you can find us at AstronomicaPodcast.com. We have all of our social media stuff there. And a link to our Dixord, where you can come and tell me how to pronounce it. And if you want to fund this outfit for some reason, it's patreon.com/AstronomicaPodcast. And we appreciate your money and keeping your opinion to yourself, Buster. It's not a producer credit. It's a ticket that you're buying. So, bye.